1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock. Deirdre Donnelly, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Deirdre, people will know you out in Dunleary. You're of course, an independent councillor on Dunleary Local Authority. You were listening to Josepha Madigan in the Dáil last night. We might just be able to play a little clip from Josepha's speech.
I'm old enough to know that there are very few women my age who have not been subjected to some form of sexual assault in their respective lifetimes. And I know this because I'm one of them. It won't come as a surprise to those of us of a similar age who have suffered this trauma. And sometimes we have suffered it more than once. It was and is a lot more common than many believe. And I always take statistics that I read with a pinch of salt.
And that was Josepha Madigan speaking in the Dáil last night, a speech, I think, a very powerful speech that has resonated with a lot of women around this country. And Deirdre, you're one of them.
That's right, yes. Yes, Katie.
Because you heard that and you thought, me too.
Yes. And I suppose the point I want to make here is that we have a justice system in this country that is genuinely not fit for purpose. And I don't think people realise just how bad it is. And I suppose that's really why I'm ringing. And, you know, when I say what I'm saying, I'm not referring to the horrific cases we hear about in relation to domestic violence, for example. And I would certainly say to anyone who finds themselves in that kind of a situation to certainly seek help. You know, there are ongoing issues and safety issues and all kinds of things there. And maybe in a lot of cases, family, you know, children involved and everything. And I'm not talking about a predator, you know, the kind of a serial rapist or someone who is out there attacking women. And you know, they, of course, they need to make a complaint. I'm talking specifically about, in my case, a one-off incident where you are unlikely to meet the individual again. I would just plead with women, don't complain. Okay. Don't report it.
Okay.
And just move on. I stupidly made the mistake of putting faith in our justice system a while back, and it's really what, at the end of the day, and I've heard this from other people as well, the justice system can often be, in a lot of cases, a lot worse than anything the individual does in the first place.
Okay, Deirdre, I just want to say, because I mean, this is, I suppose, the opposite of the message that Josepha was saying, because she was saying people don't report it, and we should report it, and we should be making our voices heard, and this should become a conversation that is had. But can you just take us back to what happened to you?
I was at an event, and there was an individual, and as I discovered afterwards, you know, what you would say as harassment, would call it harassment, just interrupting conversations I was having with other people. I barely knew this person, making derogatory comments about other people I was talking to, all of this. And later on in the evening, I noticed the way I was sitting, he kept rubbing himself up against me. This was in a bar, in full view of people, but no one seemed to notice. And this is something that has come up later in counselling. I went to counselling because there's more to this, you know, as I will explain in a minute. But I don't think people realise what it's like to be in a crowd or in a crowded place and someone doing something to you and you just don't know whether to scream. No one seems to know it's happening to you while there are people around. And that is a frightening situation to be in. But this continued. I moved away. He came over. He wanted to go to my room or me to go to his room. I was being mauled.
Just to be clear, you were at an event in a hotel.
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so...
I
was going to say, was there alcohol involved at this stage?
I want to be very, very clear. I arrived very late that night. I had hardly anything to drink. I was wearing, again, these are the myths that we hear about.
Oh, yeah, sorry. And I didn't mean, sorry, just to be clear. Yeah. I didn't mean to suggest that there was alcohol involved in your side of this, but I wondered in terms of you were in a bar with this man.
Yes, there was, yes. And you could see the way the glass was swaying and you could see the way he was walking later and all of this. And he kept insisting on this and I was being rubbed, mauled, whatever, and it got so bad I had to shout at him to leave me alone. And I knew a number of people who were present and everybody stopped, everybody looked over, and I was so embarrassed I left, which I shouldn't have had to do. I said, I'll go to my room. I was followed. What was really worrying is I was heading to my room then on the lift, and he wanted to go to my room. Still, he was on the lift. And what was really worrying about this part of it is he said, I won't even repeat what he actually said, and there was an admission to what he was doing, basically, and what he said. A number of comments, and was insisting he was going to my room. And then I got out of the lift, ran down the corridor to get away. And I was extremely, at this stage, really panicking, I suppose, at this stage. And I'm someone who's travelled a good bit. I've been abroad, I've travelled on my own, and I know how to look after myself. And I couldn't believe this was happening to me at my age in a hotel in Ireland where there were people around. Then made another comment again. I won't repeat what he said. And I...
When you say he was making comments, Deirdre, was he saying what he was going to do?
He was saying that about... he was saying he wanted to go to my room and was insisting on this.
Okay.
And yes, and there were... I won't repeat what was said, to be honest. I'd rather not. And then at this stage, I was going down to my room. I had an underlying knee condition that had repaired itself, and I was back doing jogging and running and that kind of thing. And I went over on my knee and ended up doing long-term permanent damage.
You were actually running from this man?
I was getting away, yes, yes. And what, you know, it probably was, I was upset at the time, obviously. I asked for CCTV when I left, checked out of the hotel. The next day, a number of people asked, was I okay? One person, I'll quote, said, you know, you were, they all admitted his behaviour was quite very poor. One person said, you know, you were having none of it, but he wasn't taking no for an answer. Another person said he was behaving like a pig. There were a number of other things people said as well.
And yet Deirdre, nobody intervened to step in on the night when it was happening.
People looked over, but one person did come out, and I'm being careful because I'd know some of the people who were there, one person did, yes. But at this stage, I had left. I was embarrassed, and that was the other thing. I mean, I was at something, and I was extremely embarrassed by this. So I asked for the CCTV when I left, and I did make a complaint. That was not the next day, the day after that.
Who did you complain to?
I complained to the person, first of all, on reception, and they got someone else to get the, and said they'd get the CCTV for me. I think it could have been a manager, I'm not sure. The HR person for the company, the group of hotels, phoned me on the Monday and said that they had the CCTV, but that before they would give it to me, that they would like me to go to the Gardaí. And I really, this is, I think, one of the issues that, you know, we need to address here in general. I didn't actually realise that everything he had done was criminal, was illegal. Until I went back studying law myself in September, because there has been no support. There is no support for victims, no legal support whatsoever, no assistance. You are totally on your own. And I was listening to all this talk about summary offences, indictable offences, the district court, the circuit court. There's no one person to explain things to you. And it was when I went back to study law myself that I then realised the whole evening there was... harassment, the non-fatal offences against the Person Act in relation to the fact that I sustained an injury because I was put in fear, and a number of other issues. And that's the first point I want to make, that there's no one you can talk to, no one you can go to whatsoever from whom you can seek legal advice. So go back
to the night, Deirdre. We might be jumping ahead a little bit. So on the night, you, as you say, he followed you upstairs. You fell and injured your knee running from him, getting away from him. You then obviously get away from him. You did get into your room.
And I want to be clear. He didn't touch me. I want to be clear. But what he was saying was enough for me to think I just need to get to my room quickly. And I just want to be clear about that. But I suppose my, you know, my concern here is the follow-up when you do go to the Gardaí and make a complaint. And that's where I felt that that the support isn't there. And the legal system is unbelievably poor in relation to any support for victims, to the extent, as I said, I would ask, really say to people, think twice before you do report something like this. The system is unbelievably bad.
Yeah, this is your personal experience of it, and I'm just wary of putting that word out there to tell people not to, because you know if you are a harasser, you're hearing this as well, and you're saying, you know, women will not report this, you know, so it's a kind of a carte blanche in that side. Just go ahead, tell us what happened when you went to report this.
First of all, on the following Monday, I was in the A&E. I was on crutches for some time with the injury I received. That was the first thing. What started off with the hotel telling me I should go to the Gardaí, and I said, well, look, you know, I felt at the time, it is, you know, okay, harassing someone, rubbing yourself up against someone, all these things, is it even illegal? I didn't realise any of that. And what I said, well, look, you know, if this were, and in my case it wasn't, if this were a civil case where someone tripped up, say, or slipped on water or something, and if they were going to take a case, I said, they wouldn't be going to the Gardaí. Would a solicitor not be enough looking for a CCTV? Now, what I, again, didn't realise until much later is when I contacted the Data Protection Commission that I had a legal right to CCTV on that evening. And I really am disgusted with the way the treatment I received from the premises, from the hotel specifically. I think that was really, really poor on a number of fronts. But getting back to this, I then went looking for a solicitor who would go and look for, you know, send a letter in looking for the CCTV for me. And I think, you know, this is something people don't realise if you are a victim, unlike the accused who has their legal advisor there with them from the outset. And what happened was I was looking for a solicitor. I got on to one person who told me she dealt with family law. And because I wasn't married to the individual or in a relationship with him or never had been, this wasn't relevant to her area of practice, and said, I don't do that kind of thing, basically. So she wasn't interested in looking at this. There's a family member who did qualify in law outside in the UK, who doesn't practice here, but I asked him then, I said, and that was the first time he said, look, from what we can see, everything here he did was wrong. And he suggested going to a criminal lawyer. And I think this is one of the things people don't realise if you are a victim, or maybe you have a teenage daughter or a child who tells you as a parent, you know, that they've been abused or assaulted or something. I went online looking for a criminal lawyer, and there are these websites for law firms, and they're there basically give advice on, you know, if you have been accused of a sexual assault, contact us, these are our success stories in getting sentences reduced and people whatever. So you're a victim looking to go to get CCTV the first place, and that's the week after this incident. This is what I was doing, sitting at home in pain, looking at this. Eventually, I did get someone to go looking for the CCTV, and they still refused to hand it over.
Can I just be clear? What was your issue with the premises, the hotel where this occurred? Was it because you felt that they had a liability here, and that you were they were treating this as a personal injury claim?
I think they may have been. I never once wanted to go down a personal injuries route, although this has cost me thousands in medical fees, thousands. I never did. I just couldn't face doing all that. I never wanted to. But I think there's an issue in the hotel here where, you know, and I've seen the CCTV where the barman looked over and saw me shouting that night. There was someone in reception who saw what was going on. I did complain. I sent, you know, I had to then get on to the Data Protection Commissioner. They did everything they could to prevent me from looking at it. And I suppose for me, for a lot of people, you know, there is this assumption, oh, this is the kind of thing that happens, some poor girl in a dark alley at night taking a shortcut home. You don't expect something like this to happen to you. And I think for me, it was the next day and the day after, I said, did he really behave that way? And that's why I wanted to look at this for myself. So the Gardaí then, the hotel premises or their solicitor said I should still go to the Gardaí. I took it that I would still get a copy of the CCTV. So I went to the Gardaí then a few weeks later, and I, you know, mentioned this. And again, I just want to say, first of all, there was a wonderful Garda I've been to a couple of times in relation to this, not far from me. And there's another investigating Garda in close to where the premises was, who are wonderful, because I spoke to them a number of times and they were really fantastic. But I think the whole system out there is unbelievably poor. I went in on first of all, and I went into a room and two Gardaí were there, came in. One of them was opposite me and he was taking notes. The other one was talking over to him about a meeting in another room and kept going in and out as I was there in an upset state, talking about what had happened to me. And they kept interrupting. Someone kept coming in and out, knocking on the door, coming in and out as I was there. And I just don't think that's the right way to treat someone who's the victim of something like this, who's going in a really upset state. They, you know, I think there should be some protocol there or some system, even just a notice on the door or something to say do not disturb. I think that from the outset was wrong. But what happened then was I was told unless I made a full statement that, or did I want to make a full statement, that they took notes on what happened, and I took it then that they would get the CCTV at that stage. It turns out they didn't. Then I went to this person's boss to make a complaint. They said they would take it seriously, and they suggested I go to the Gardaí. And it was sometime later, it took a few months before I had the courage to go, and I made an official statement. And they then said that they couldn't do anything about it because, according to them, it was now a criminal matter. And I think that opens up a huge issue where we're looking at, say, for example, colleges and employers where people make a complaint. And, you know, is it a case right across the country that if someone makes a complaint about an individual at work or an individual in a voluntary organisation or an individual in their college and they're investigating the complaint and they might be looking at disciplinary action for the person who's been accused, but if you also go to the Gardaí, that suddenly that complaint has to be dropped. And you could have people, it could be years before anything it comes, you know, anything continues and is done in relation to the criminal side of it. So I think there's huge confusion over that as well. And I think, you know, that's another reason why I think I would be really concerned over, you know, this talk at the moment about our third level colleges, and we were, you know, teaching consent and people they should have a process if people make a complaint. Is it true? Because this is what I was told. Is it true that if someone does make a complaint and they also go to the Gardaí, that the complaint that has been made within the organisation, the college or the, you know, in their place of employment, has to be then put on hold? You know, so there's an issue there.
And what did happen, Deirdre, with the Gardaí complaint?
I went, it was a few months later, and as I said, I went. I then, you know, as I said, made a statement. I wasn't given a copy of my statement. I wasn't allowed to get a copy of my statement. The person, the witnesses or witnesses who were spoken to, but first of all, the Garda rang me a few weeks later who was investigating, who was wonderful, I must say. They really are fantastic. And he rang me to say everything in my statement was accurate. And, you know, you could see what was happening. You could see what was going on. That was that next thing. The individual was interviewed, and he was shown the CCTV, He was shown my statement. I'm not sure if he was given a copy of the witness statements or not. I don't know. I never got a copy of his statement. I got nothing. And basically, at the end of this, about a year later, there was still no word from the DPP. A whole year after officially making a complaint, there was not one. There was nothing. So I rang them. And again, there were issues here. The first day I rang, I think from what I gather, they mistook me for someone else because I was put through to someone who spoke to me about the case and then realised I was the person who made the complaint and then wouldn't talk to me anymore. I then wrote in and someone who was making a decision wrote back to me and then I phoned. And when I was talking to that person, they heard about the medical issues and the health issues and suggested I send in those reports as well. So 5 medical reports went in. One of them went missing somewhere along the way. And then when I rang back afterwards, a not particularly nice person told me I shouldn't have been talking to that person who was making a decision on the case because I'm not supposed to be talking to them. But no one told me that. So all the way, every step of the way, there is no one on your side. There's no one to support you. You have no one to advise you. And this at this stage was over a year after I first made the complaint. And finally, 14 months later, they came back and said there wasn't enough. They felt there wasn't enough to prosecute and to secure a conviction. Yes, exactly. So I then asked for a review, and that's supposed to come back in 4 weeks. And the review took 4 months. So basically, it was 22 months from when I made an official complaint to when I was told that they weren't going to go ahead and prosecute. And, you know, I can live with the system of justice as in, you know, people are entitled to a fair trial and they're entitled to all of, you know, to some a fair system. But certainly the fact it takes 22 months. Like we hear about these stories where, you know, a court case can take a couple of years to come up. But in my case, it took 22 months to make a decision.
About not having a court case.
Yes. Mm. Now, if they were going to have a court case, it could have been another 2 or 3 years. And I don't think what people realise, again, and this is another, there are a number of serious issues here, but another issue as well is, you know, if that's something like, you know, your car is stolen or, you know, your house is broken into, you're not there in the house and, you know, you put in your insurance claim and you move on and in 2 or 3 years' time, a court case might come up, you put it aside and you turn up on the day. You know, that in many cases, that's the system and people can do that. But if something like this, you're trying to physically get mended, you're certainly trying to psychologically move on and you're being prevented from doing that.
And can I ask you, Deirdre, like what impact did this have on you in your day-to-day life?
Well, first of all, there was a physical element. As I said, I had problems, I was on crutches and going back to the hospital after that for injections to my knee. And that went on for some time. And I think what really got to me as well is people saying, oh, what happened to you? And, you don't want to be telling people what happened. I've an underlying respiratory condition, an autoimmune condition, and I've been doing very well, you know, dealing with that. And within about a year after this, that got really, really bad, where steroids and antibiotics wouldn't cure it. And that went on for quite a long time. I'm now on long-term steroids because of it. And this does relate back, and you know, the consultant I have has clearly, he did a medical report, and that is as a result of the stress that this caused. You know, it has dragged on and on. I can't do any jogging, which I really enjoyed. I used to love the 5K runs and that kind of thing, the community races. That's gone completely. I'll never be able to do that again. And I just think the impact on family life as well has been very, very difficult. I think they've been, you know, my family have had to deal with a lot in relation to this.
Have you had counselling, Deirdre?
I have, yes. I went for about a year. to counselling until COVID started and the lockdown started. And this is a huge issue, and I would like to say this as well, and I think it's a major flaw in our system in relation to these issues. And that is, I was paying €75 a week to go for counselling, and for over a year. You go in, you're talking about things, you're trying to move on. You don't know when you'll get a letter or a phone call from the Gardaí. You don't know when you'll get a letter from the DPP, and you're waiting for all of this. And you're really trying to move on. And it's very, very difficult to. And you know you've got to go through this again if there is a court case. But the other issue, and this is extremely worrying, and there was a lady called Sarah Grace, who spoke out in, I think, a few months back in relation to this, who was a victim of a very vicious assault and went public about her whole experience with the justice system. And one of the issues that did come to light there is the fact that your counselling notes can be used to assist the defence in court.
Yeah, am I right in saying, Georgia, that has been addressed in the most recent legislation in relation to access to counselling notes, that it will no longer be the case?
Well, I know in my case, when I was going, this could have been a major issue, and certainly that did upset me quite a lot. And I know that there were a number of issues that were raised in the O'Malley report, which came out, I think it hasn't been fully implemented yet, but they started that in 2018, I believe. And a number of issues were supposed to be addressed. But I think that is, that is one that would have been of huge concern to me. And certainly Sarah Grace, who spoke about this in March, she actually said that was an issue. I don't know when the actual trial was in her case, but she was saying that was an issue in her case. I don't believe the notes were used in her case, but she did say that was something, I think, that can be worrying.
But Georgia, your overall point is your huge disappointment with the justice system and, in terms of their response and the response when you do go and report something like this. But I suppose the bigger thing is that there would have been a time not so long ago where somebody mauling somebody, to use that word that you used, in a bar or in public, nobody would have blinked, really, that it wouldn't have been considered a serious assault. Now, obviously, there was follow on for you. He followed you. You were genuinely frightened for what was happening. But I think we have, at least gone to a place now where that is no longer acceptable or should never be acceptable.
But someone, I think, rubbing themselves up against a woman somewhere, I think, is also, that is something that has been, is a criminal offence as well. And as I said, I suppose really from my point of view is, the premises, the hotel, encouraged me to go to the Gardaí and report this. His boss, encouraged me to report this. And as I said, I did. But I suppose the injuries I sustained afterwards was the other issue. But the reason, I think there are cases here that are a lot worse, and I would have huge concerns, particularly over the DPP. The fact it takes 14 months to make a decision for someone who's really might be trying to move on.
Yes, or maybe, and I suppose we should be very clear. We're just not clear at this stage, are we? At what point the file went to the DPP, and how long it was with the DPP before a decision was made? So we just need to be careful with how we how we present that. I'm going to have to take a break. I just want to clarify something, because you did refer to it there, and it is an issue. Counselling notes. I'm told that Nolene Blackwell of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre spoke on this today, and she said that counselling notes of sexual assault victims are used and are only used to discredit victims in court. She said that counselling notes are used in cases of sexual assault victims, unlike in other cases of physical abuse. And I think you were making that point, Deirdre. I want to wish you the best.
Thank you.
We have other callers I want to try and get in on this, but I thank you very much for speaking out and telling us your story today.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I want to go now to Pat Cusack. Pat, good afternoon.
Good Good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, Pat, you were concerned there by Deirdre's, you know, saying that she would not recommend people to report this type of an assault.
I respect Deirdre's experience. It wasn't a nice experience and pretty traumatic and awful. But I would definitely be at loggerheads as regards reporting. I myself was a victim of abuse, very serious abuse by a serial abuser many years ago. And
this is Michael. Pat, just to explain to people, it's Michael Shine, isn't it?
Yes, Michael Shine, Dr. Michael Shine, the consultant who was at Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital many years ago. The only reason that guy's now in jail, thanks be to God, and it took many years for him to arrive there after four decades of many, many cases against him. But the only reason I got success in my case was because I came forward, trusted the system, and kept on going, even as hard as it was. It was difficult, it was traumatic in many ways, but you have to, and I appeal to every victim and any victim, whatever gender, whatever type of assault or sexual assault or abuse it is, to come forward and trust unguarded, because that's the only way forward.
Yeah, I think people will remember the Michael Shine case particularly. There was a very good RTÉ investigation documentary on that story, and it was really shocking, I suppose, first and foremost, that he was allowed to, or you know, his abuse continued over such a long period.
Well, Michael Shine and RTÉ, thank you so much, because the prime time investigators team were really, it was the turning point in the machine for justice being driven forward. Although that was back in 2009, the prime time team was amazing because it actually exposed the many, many cases that were against this guy. And then the justice system really, really kicked in. That guy had been to trial before in 2003 and, you know, the victims were devastated afterwards. He was found not guilty by a jury of his peers. Now, the only way forward was to report it fully, trust UnGuarded, Sia Connacht, trust the new system that's there that's more learned, more wise, more sensitive, more empathetic, more professional in dealing, particularly with sexual abuse. So that's my opinion. That's my great thanks to RTÉ for what they did and how they helped the process to go forward.
And what did it mean for you, Pat, to see justice served here?
Your colleagues covered it very well on the day, and I would class myself as friends with some of the people who covered the case because they were so supportive. On the very day that the guilty verdict came through, it was a huge weight off my shoulders. It was like breaking out of, I could maybe compare it to maybe Nelson Mandela walking away from Easter Island where he was in jail or whatever. Just the freedom was just massive. It just allowed me to start living, and although, you know, it took me 40 years for justice, but I turned 59 the other day, but I only started really living about 3 years ago, the day that he was convicted. That's when I started living rather than existing. And for victims, that's the relief and the closure that you get. You never lose the hurt and the pain, but definitely it closes a lot of doors to the psychological trauma and pain. It does go away.
Yeah, and I know in that speech that Josepha Madigan gave, she spoke about how people don't report because they're embarrassed, that they want to put it behind them. But as you're saying there, in many, like, this is not something that will go away because you don't want to talk about it.
Well, such is our society for many, many years, that it was embarrassing, that indeed it was indoctrinated in you as a child, that how dare you bring embarrassment on the family. It's all this stuff that you heard, even if you went for help. As I found in my own circumstance, I found that when I turned to GP, when I turned to the priest, when I turned to people who I thought were going to help me, there was always doors closed and, oh, keep this quiet now. I think the time now is to move forward and to deal with this matter and help rid, we'll never totally rid it, but at least limit or reduce the number some way in people coming forward and getting justice for these people and have a deterrent for these people who decide, like in Deirdre's case, that they can just manhandle somebody or be persistent that way or in more serious forms of abuse. You know, the only way forward is to trust the great work. And I have to say, they don't get the chance really and they don't get the recognition. But the team from Drogheda, who specifically looked after the many victims of Shine, have done an outstanding job in every facet. The court system, the support system in the courts was amazing as well. I didn't even know, and I'd be fairly learning it, I didn't know it existed, that there was a victim suite, and there was great support there during the court process. My trial went on for over 3 weeks, and I was there every day. But I kind of lived that trial for many years expecting it. I didn't know what it was going to be like. As for Deirdre's point about and Nolan Blackwell's point, and she does a great work, go for your counselling, go to the Rape Crisis Centre. They know what they're dealing with. As for them bringing up notes and everything else, look at any of these people who come forward are innocent until proven guilty, and the defence teams will go helter-skelter to defend their client who's in the witness box. As I found out in my case, they actually do take your life apart, but you have to put the thing in a weighing scales and have one side the justice and freedom which you will get from putting your case forward and being strong enough. There's only one way to do it, and that's for a jury of our peers to find them guilty. The only way you can do that is to present yourself as best you can. Don't change, keep strong. And, you know, there is great support out there for victims.
God, it is great to hear that, Pat, because you do really worry for people coming forward, because we do hear the bad side of things so often. I'm going to bring in, stay with us, Pat, I'm going to bring in Aisling. You had a good experience when you took this big step.
I did, Katie. I suppose for me, I don't know if I'd call it a big step. I had numerous incidents of assault down through the years, and I'm a little more weathered than some people. I'm 37 now, so I was in a nightclub in Dublin and with my partner on a night out. And I was at the bar ordering a drink, and someone came over and slapped me on my backside a couple of times, which was quite shocking. The bouncers intervened quite swiftly, to their credit, and they defused the situation. The bouncer at the time of the incident, who was in the nightclub area, asked me what I wanted to do. Did, you know, they kicked him out, he was outside, did I want them to hold him or let him go? And I said, no, hold him. I'm going to ring the Gardaí, because, to be frank, I'm quite sick of his behaviour down through the years. So I proceeded to ring the Gardaí whilst I was outside on the street. And I was waiting for a call back from the call obviously went into the regular number, and then the Garda station rang me back, and in the the head bouncer, now not the bouncer who I had originally spoken to, the head guy came over and kind of said, you know, not just let him go, you know, get on with your night, and it's not that bad, and you know, this man probably has a wife and kids at home, want to destroy his life, minor incident, and you know, you're being a bit dramatic, aren't you, kind of thing, which, to be frank, kind of really got under my skin. And I kind of felt at the time, you know, I hadn't really ever thought that the mentality of people in the security industry would would be so lax, to be honest. And the first bouncer that I encountered inside in the same premises was very supportive. You know, he encouraged me. He said, yeah, you're right. This happens in here a lot. And things never, you know, get followed up on. And, you know, we would like to see more people like you reporting things like this because it happens so much. And normally it happens to younger girls who are a lot more vulnerable and maybe intoxicated or who don't have the support or the wherewithal to follow through with reporting an incident like this. So I had a very good experience with premises. But when the Gardaí arrived, I couldn't commend them more. They were so empathetic. I found myself apologising to the guards actually when they arrived on the scene. Apologizing profusely, and I'm kind of embarrassed now because, you know, I apologize. I said, look, I'm so sorry for wasting your time. You know, it's a, I don't know, was it a Friday or Saturday night? I'm sure you have a million other things that are much more important than coming out here to deal with this. And they were very supportive and very reassuring and said, no, like, this is, you know, this is horrendous what's happened to you. This is minor. This isn't something to be overlooked. This is important, and you know, we're here now and we're going to look into this and we'll be here to support you. And I couldn't thank them enough for their support and their empathy. I was put in a very strange situation because obviously that head bouncer was leaning heavily on me to let it go. So to have the Gardaí on the scene be so supportive, they know this isn't acceptable, what has happened to you. No, this is not legal, what has happened to you. Yes, you are right to call us, and you are not wasting our time. We are going to, and they spent so much time. They went in and reviewed the CCTV footage, which clearly showed what had happened. The Gardaí came out and he said, look, this is not, you know, we can't say too much at the moment, but, you know, the evidence strongly corroborates your version of events. Would it be okay to come down to the station tonight whilst everything is fresh in your memory? If it's not, you can come back tomorrow. It's been a long night. It's late. What, you know, they were very empathetic and, you know, understood that it was late, and I was in a bit of shock and I was a bit upset. So
Were these male guards?
Two male guards. I don't know if I can name them, but they were wonderful. They were just, Pier Street Guard Station.
Okay. Well, they know who they are. They'll know who they are, and they'll appreciate that, I'm sure. But yeah. So, if we can, you did make a statement ultimately, and did it go to court?
It went to court last year, and he was found guilty of common assault, which for me was quite upsetting. And I think for the Gardaí, now I can't speak for the guards, but I do know that the Gardaí had recommended in the file to the DPP that it be brought forward as a sexual assault case, which in my opinion it was. I don't think, in my opinion, any man coming and putting his hands on an area such as your buttocks or on your person, for me, is sexual assault. It's not common assault, as far as I can see. And the Gardaí were very much of the same opinion. So for me, when I heard that the DPP were proceeding, it was a mixed emotion because this man has now been convicted of common assault, but in my eyes, he's a predator. The manner in which he conducted himself that night, to me, and I'm not, you know, I'm not a guard, I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist. The manner in which he conducted himself that night, to me, seemed like this is a pattern of behaviour. This is a regular occurrence for him.
Okay, I'm just going to say we cannot actually say that, obviously, and you've acknowledged that we don't know this, but that was your sense at that moment in time. That's what you felt.
That's what I felt.
But I mean, I'm just, you know, and some people might be listening to the story and say, oh, you know, he slapped your bottom, yeah, your behind, yeah, in a at a nightclub. You know, why were you so upset? But I'm just trying to imagine you're standing in the street in the middle of the day and a stranger comes up and touches you. Or as you say, slaps you on your bottom. Like, that would be, it would be such a violation, I think anyone would acknowledge. But I think to some degree, there is a sense that in a nightclub scenario, that shouldn't be taken as seriously as that bouncer was trying to say to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, for him to suggest that is insulting, not only to me as a woman, but to any decent person. You know, the same thing happens to men all the time in nightclubs. Men are assaulted frequently. And if it's in a nightclub situation, or if there's alcohol involved, which, you know, I had maybe a small amount of alcohol on board, which, you know, I think kind of helped keep cool heads at the time, so it didn't escalate into a worse situation. But to suggest, or the suggestion that alcohol, you know, your perception of things might be slightly dramatized because of alcohol, or the, you know, like, I'm fiercely of the mind that people who are in nightclubs, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. Now, I was not provocatively dressed. I would say I was not, by any stretch of the imagination, the most attractive person in the nightclub at that time. I just happened to be in the worst place at the worst time. I think I was wearing jeans. I wasn't even wearing a skirt or anything. But for people to suggest that the way you dress brings a certain amount of unwanted attention is hugely insulting as well, and has absolutely no bearing on whether or not you should accept an assault by anyone. It's just not acceptable in any situation.
You didn't get the conviction that you had hoped for. This man was convicted of an offence. Would you, if it happened to you tomorrow again, would you pursue it?
1,000,000%. And not only would I pursue it, any person, and there have been one or two people that I have encountered since then who have had similar instances happen to them, I would be fiercely protective of them and their kind of their person, and I would encourage everyone, male, female, trans, anyone, if you are assaulted, ring the Gardaí. You will have a very supported experience. You will have people there who will be able to, you know, maybe anticipate some of the feelings that you're going to have. You're going to be angry. You're going to be feeling vulnerable. You're going to feel like, God, am I being dramatic? Am I being, you know, am I, you know, should I let this go? You'll have people who are able to support you and help you. And they are wonderful people. The Gardaí are so professional. I found them so empathetic. They were very thorough and they were with every step of the way.
Okay, that's great to hear again. Pat, you'll be support that 100%.
Absolutely, 100%. Well spoken, Aisling. I would just like to finish off by saying, Katie, I encourage all victims out there to come forward regardless of what assault it is. Let the authorities decide the gravity of it.
Okay.
And just be courageous and be strong. And for those going through the process at the moment with files of DPPs or anything, you just got to trust them, because the only way forward, it's about time that this country turned against this awful history of abuse and the perpetrators getting away with it. The only way to nail them and to get closure for yourself is to stick with the process, and hopefully it'll be delivered in court.
Okay.
For those, there are many, of course, that the process fails them, but we've still got to keep going.
Yeah.
That's the only way, Katie.
Okay, thanks for that, Pat. Thanks, Aisling. We'll stay with this, but we'll take a quick break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I want to go to Rachel now. Rachel, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Good. You've been through all this, Rachel.
I went through the process and the process failed me. But I would absolutely encourage every single person who has ever been raped, violated, abused, assaulted, report it. And the reason being, the very first question when I went to report it to the Gardaí, the very first question I asked this very young guard, he was a dream. He was so good, but he was very young. And I'm a woman in my 50s, and I felt stupid. But the first question I asked him was, if I give you the person who raped me, if I give you his name, can you check and see, has he done it before? And he said, unfortunately, we can't do that. We have to take, I'll make notes, and then, you know, we'll take a statement, and then we'll go forward from there. You know, now, I know this guy has done this before, right?
Okay, just to fill in people a little bit about your situation. This happened to you when you were very young?
Three years ago.
Oh, just 3 years ago.
I'm 57 now.
Right.
Okay, so I'm not a young one, I'm not even attractive anymore, you know.
I'm sure that's not true, Rachel, but...
I'm not a young thing.
But what happened?
I don't really want to go into the what happened. I actually met him online. My kids were saying, "Mom, like, you know, you're too young to be on your own." When I met, they're in happy relationships. They've met him, people online, and you know, why not go for it? So I went for it. Met this lovely man, tall, good looking. He could have seduced me, no problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he chose to rape me.
On your first date?
Second date.
Right.
Second date. And the lies, I was groomed. And that's, you know, a woman my age to admit to being groomed, you know. Oh, look, anyway, it happened. I reported it to the Gardaí. And the Gardaí were excellent. And it was the DPP who let me down. Because they chose to believe him.
The DPP recommended not to prosecute?
No, yeah, because there wasn't enough evidence. So they basically took his word over mine. Even though every single thing I told the Gardaí was backed up by CCTV. I told them I was in a certain place at a certain time. It was on the cameras. I was at another place at a certain time. It was on the cameras. The DPP, everything I said, I described where it happened, the room where it happened, even, you know, where tables were placed, chairs were placed, everything. And the DPP took his word over mine. And that is unforgivable.
And how are you now, Rachel, in relation to this? Like, what impact has it had on you?
Well, the effect made me quite angry. I am having counselling, which is great. I can't do anything for myself in my own case because I appealed it, and they rejected it again. They upheld their first decision that there was lack of evidence. So I have to accept that. I have upgraded my security on my house. I don't go out anymore. I resigned myself to being single for the rest of my life, which I'm happy enough with. I have a good life, a good family, you know, and all of that.
But you're only 57.
I'm only 57, yes. But this man has done it before, and I know it. He told me that a woman like me was trained to take down a man like him because of my past career. Okay?
Right.
And I'm not going to go into that, but he told me, he knew what he was doing, and that's what he said to me. A woman like you is trained to take down a man like me. physically trained. And I went, I had no choice but to allow him to continue to do what he was doing to me because he was so strong. And the Garda who investigated it, he rang me one day and he said, we were talking, we arrested him under caution. He's given a statement, but he said, when he arrested me, he said, he kind of put it up to me. And the shoulders went back, you know, and he said, I had to put my hand out and say, no, hang on there, but, you know.
So was the suggestion, Rachel, that you could physically have been able to...
And the Garda said to me, there is absolutely no doubt in his mind that I was the bravest woman he ever met. He said, because you did what you had to do to survive. And that's what the Garda said to me. He even told the DPP that I was a good witness. And you're a witness in your own case, which people don't understand. But you're a witness. But the Garda was so kind, so good, so supportive. And he said he could not believe, he said, you were so brave to do what you had to do to stay safe, to come home. Because it was the only thing that was going through my head that night. I have to get home. I have to get home. I have to get home. And that man drove me to my front door home afterwards.
Did that become a problem for you? The fact that...
You knew where I lived?
No, that you took a drive home from him after this assault.
Yes, it did. Yes, it was. But I still would argue that it was for my safety. I had to pull it down, if you like. Not let him see that he had done harm. It was a self-protection. And, you know, you hear a lot of abuse victims, you know, try to calm the situation and calm. And so, and just get home. And once I got home, that was it. I was safe.
Was it a big decision for you then to go to the guards?
Yes. It took me about 2 weeks. He never denied having sex. He said it was consensual when the Garda did interview him. You know? But it wasn't what he did to me, it was rape.
Despite, you know, what you went through and the fact that you were let down in the end in terms of the DPP decision not to go through with this or not to proceed, you were absolutely clear that that was the right decision to go to the guard.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I do think there are other women out there who have suffered at the hands of this man. And if they don't report it, no justice, none of us will ever get justice. If one other person comes out and reports an incident they suffer by an individual and it happens to be the same man,
yeah,
then he has to face the consequences of his actions. Because by not reporting it, and I can't believe Deirdre said that she wouldn't report and she'd tell people not to report. Is she a public representative? I can't believe she said, don't report it. You have to report it to link them up.
Yes, because obviously, as you say, if you report it, you may save somebody down the line from the experience you have, you know, you're still dealing with.
Yeah, I wasn't lucky, okay? And it is, unfortunately, maybe to do with luck. But I wasn't lucky enough to get the process, you know, to go through the process and successfully, right? But somebody else might report that same person. And they say, oh, hang on a minute, there's his name there. Oh, we'll go back and look at that. It's the same, the same way of carrying on that has happened there. And then somebody else might report it. And all of a sudden, he becomes a serial rapist.
Yeah.
You know, and I would plead with people, please, please, please report it to to a friend, bring a friend with you. My friends, my family have been excellent. You will always have support. And when you're telling, when you know what happens. Look, they said there's lack of evidence, right? Oh, God love him. You know, his marriage might be damaged. His life might be damaged. My life has been damaged from his actions. My life has changed. And he can carry on doing what he's doing.
And was he a married man?
Well, he said he wasn't. He said at the time he was separated or something. I don't know. He said he was separated. He was divorced or something at the time. But I have no idea whether that was true or not. Yeah. And again, I didn't see his statement. I did read my statement over, and over, I don't know, 30 pages of it. And I signed it, and there was no problem with that, but I didn't see his statement. But, you know, like, if it had gone to court, I would have heard it read out, obviously, in court.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, people should be very, you know, Deirdre at the beginning said she was embarrassed and she shouted at the man in the bar. And she was embarrassed. Well, he wasn't. He carried on doing what he was doing, you know. And people should not be embarrassed. I'm absolutely raging, filled with rage over what this man did to me, you know. But I'm not going around furious all the time, if you know what I mean. I'm not going around angry all the time or anything like that. In fact, I've taken, you know, a big look at me, you know, and it's been a process.
And I think, you know, Rachel, what Josepha Madigan said yesterday or last night in the Dáil, that there's, you know, very few women, middle-aged women, as she would, you know, a woman of her age, she said, middle-aged women in this country will not have had, will have escaped sexual assault. And I think that might be of some comfort to many women who maybe have never talked about it, but must, you know, should feel that they are not alone.
Yeah, even if it's only a slap on the backside. You know, that's a sexual assault. You know, even if it's, and I'm not putting that down at all, because that's, you know, that's not acceptable. But, you know, like young women going out to nightclubs or going to the bar or going on a picnic even, and they meet up with this guy who thinks, oh, she's attractive. She, you know, I can do this or I can do that. And Josepha Madigan, I have to say, I would love, she is in the prime position as a TD, and I believe she's educated in law as well. And even if it took a constitutional change to allow victims their voice in court, because having your losing your voice is so disheartening.
Yeah, well, of course, Josepha Madigan is a family law solicitor, a well-experienced family law solicitor. She will be familiar with a lot of this from the court side of it. Rachel, will you stay there with us? I have to get in another break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And before I let you go, Rachel, I just want to commend you for, you know, the bravery you showed in taking that case forward and even just talking to us again about it today. I'm sure it'll touch a lot of women, and hopefully, you know, the message you're sending out there, report, 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 will reach a lot of ears.
Katie, I would love if Josepha Madigan got in touch with me, because I would talk to her and I will talk to anybody. I want women to stand up and be counted and tell these men who rape women or rape other men, they have no right to do this to us. And we're not taking it lying down anymore. They have no protection if people report them.
Okay, well said, Rachel, well said. I just want to quickly try and bring in Pamela. Pamela, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, Pamela, you had a horrific experience from your childhood.
I did, yeah. I was sexually abused by a neighbour from between the ages of 4 and 8. Yeah, and I had that court case going on. It just concluded last year. The whole experience of the justice system lasted for 5 years, which obviously was too long. But I finally got justice, although some people wouldn't call it justice. I got justice last year in July when he was sentenced. The sentence he received, he pled guilty, and the sentence he received was just a 3-year suspended sentence. And that was suspended for 5 years. So basically, he got a slap on the wrist. I obviously was devastated with that sentence, but at the same time, I would echo what the majority of your other the other people that you have spoken. I'd echo what they said in that they have to report. You have to report, and I do not regret reporting one bit.
Because I mean, I must say, your case really shocked me because the abuse was prolonged and was very, very serious.
Yeah, it was. It was, and it was traumatic. I mean, there was digital penetration, there was grooming. It has had an awful, awful, awful impact on my life. Now, I have to say, thank God, with counselling and with the good people I have around me, my family, my friends, I have come through the other side. I have a good job. I have a little boy. I'm really happy in my life, but I will always harbour resentment and anger and just a feeling of injustice. And I spoke in my victim impact statement about how I've lived with the feeling of guilt since the age of 4. I shouldn't have even known what guilt was at the age of 4. And I still harbour that to this day. I harbour the guilt that he should harbour but doesn't really harbour. He goes around to the local community still as if, you know, nothing ever happened. He's like an upstanding pillar of the community, despite what he did to me. I think with Josefa Madigan's talking to Dahl yesterday, I think what she was saying about, you know, taking the statistics with a pinch of salt, because most victims don't report, I think that's so true. And I think a big reason for this and for the that people don't report is that the justice system doesn't encourage people to come forward, and the sentencing given to these people doesn't encourage the victims to come forward.
Yeah, and yet, you know, we heard from Pat there, who was a victim of Michael Shine. I mean, he was so grateful for what happened. But that was the second go the justice system had in that case. His abuser had been let off in the first case, or they're not let off, but the jury didn't find him guilty in the first case. And it was a second go. So it can be difficult to get a conviction. But again, as Pat said, like, it's such a huge weight off his shoulders when you do hear those words.
Oh, it is. And I mean, it has been, even though I was very disappointed with the result, it has been a massive weight off my shoulders to be able to come out to speak about it. I've had so many people come to me telling me their stories, which has, you know, let them speak about it. And it's just, it needs to be spoken about, because, and that's why I commend Miss Madigan for speaking about her personal story, because I know myself how difficult it can be. But I think she showed great bravery, especially with someone with such a public platform, to speak so candidly about it. That no doubt helps to ensure that the stigma associated with being a victim of sexual abuse and sexual violence, you know, is lessened.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Pamela, I'm out of time. Thank you. You know, you're saying well done to Josefa, but well done to yourself and to all our callers today. We really appreciate it. It's a very, very important topic. I'm going to have to take my last break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And again, I just want to thank all our callers today. Some very difficult stories being told there. And if anyone is affected by that, I just want to give you the 24-hour helpline for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. It is 1800 778 888. That's 1800 778 888. Today's programme was produced by Angus McNally. Our BCO was Daniel Keating. Dave Gibson was on sound. Stand by now for Ray Darcy.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.